The grueling long-distance sled dog race known as the Iditarod is currently underway in Alaska. It spans more than 1,100 miles from Anchorage to Nome. Writer Gary Paulson wrote a book based on his experience in the race. That book, Winter Dance, was adapted into the film Snow Dogs, which opened earlier this year. Paulson writes books for young adults as well as books for adults. He's won several Newbery Awards. Much of his writing is based on his own life, which has been filled with adversity and adventure. He's worked as a teacher, soldier, actor, trapper, and migrant farm worker. He's been a drunk and at one time lived in incredible poverty. Right now, he's speaking at schools in Naperville, Illinois, where his books have been selected for their citywide reading program. In 1992, after the publication of his novel Clabbered Dirt, Sweet Grass, I asked him to describe the Iditarod.
Yeah, you go from Anchorage to Nome, right across the middle, kind of, and you go across a few mountain ranges and up the Yukon River and then out to the Bering Sea, and then you run across part of the Bering Sea, too.
Now, my favorite part, if I have the rules right, is that if you're collapsing or near death, no one is supposed to come to your aid.
They won't help you. They'll step over you. They won't. If anybody helps you, you're disqualified, and they know that. So if you say, I scratch, or if you say, I need help, then you're out of the race, and then they'll help you, and they'll do anything. I mean, people will, you know. But another musher can help you without being disqualified. So other mushers, they help each other across. I mean, even the really competitive front-end people do. If somebody's in trouble, they'll stop and help. And I know people who are very dedicated to winning who have stopped and lost positions because they've stopped to help somebody build a fire because they went through the ice or, you know, they're wet or something, things mm-hmm. like that.
You can explain to me, a non-adventurer, what is so thrilling about the Iditarod?
Christ, I don't know. It's insane to do it. My wife says you got to kind of crank your IQ down to about 13.
Why?
But I think there's also a cliche that says no marriage survives three Iditarods, and it's maybe not accurate in my case, but it does put a strain on your life. What happens is you become a cave painting. You go back thousands and thousands of years. The dogs don't know that it's high tech. They don't understand technology. And so to run those dogs, to bond with them the right way, you have to become very primitive in your mind. I'm not talking about macho crap here now, but I'm talking about becoming purely human, truly human, without the modern trappings. And that becomes a very desirable state. It still is. I miss it terribly.
What does it mean? What kind of state is this?
A kind of a primitive exaltation. You begin to realize what's very important in your life, and it isn't how you look, and it's not money, and it's not... You just understand the basics of what you're doing, of breathing, of living, of thinking, of reacting to the nature. I think part of it is we have lost the bond with the earth that we need. And farming and the race are similar in that they reestablish that bond. It has to be there. When you run dogs, you cannot run them like a snow machine. You know, you have to understand that they are dogs, are very primitive, and you have to go back to that earlier bond. And farming is the same, I think.
What kind of relationship do you have to the dogs who pull your sled? I mean, how do you build a relationship with them differently than you'd build a relationship with a pet dog?
Well, you just with them more. And what happens is they learn to read your shoulder motions and the way you think and the way your voice sounds. In fact, you growl after a while. You growl at them a lot. And I mean, you talk that way. You just, you know, and they understand what you mean. And they became closer than other people. I mean, lead dogs knew me better than my wife knows me. I mean, really, seriously, and I'm very close to my wife. I mean, it's just that the bond that happens is extremely close. You live because they make the right decisions, lead dogs, for instance. Or you can die if they make the wrong, if they take you on bad ice or if they don't want to do something that's safe, you can really get messed up.
I find it interesting that somebody as verbal as you, both as a speaker and as a writer, would spend all this time in a completely nonverbal situation.
I got over 20,000, maybe 22,000 miles on sleds.
Mm-hmm.
And most of that time, you're silent. You don't say anything because the dogs don't need you to talk much. And it's interesting because I I lusted after it, the solitude. I just loved it. I rode all the time. I ran dogs. When you train dogs, you run, say, 4 hours on and four off. And you just stop wherever you are and build a fire or sit down in a snowbank. And I had notebooks with me, and I would write. I tried a laptop for a while, but the batteries got cold, and they don't work when they're cold. I really did. I tried. About 10 below, you're done with a laptop. It won't work after that. And close to zero, even, is kind of rough. They don't like it much.
Wait, what's the most awful or frightening part of running the Iditarod?
The hallucinations become really mean about the third night, and deciding what's real and what isn't real becomes kind of a nightmare in some cases. I mean, I had, at one time, I thought my whole team was on fire, and I was up throwing snow on them trying to put them out. They thought I was nuts. God, they couldn't understand what I was doing, you know. But I'd seen light flicking from the snow from their feet in the light from my headlamp, and I focused on it, and it got more and more, and then it started to look like little fires on their feet. And then, whew, the whole team went up. And I stopped, and I ran up, and I was screaming, you know, God, I said, you're on fire. And I was throwing snow on them, trying to put them out.
When did you figure out it was just a hallucination?
It just lasted, like, I don't know, a minute, uh-huh. Something like that.
What do the hallucinations come from? From
sleep deprivation. You simply don't sleep for the race. You kind of catch dozes here and there, but you really don't sleep. And by the third night, everybody's wonky. I mean, it's really, from about midnight to about 6 in the morning, is just a fright. It's just incredible. That's the best time to run, because the dogs are, it's cooler and they like to run at night. And so you run during that time, but your brain is just fried, you know. I had this guy with a trench coat sitting on my sled for hour after hour, and he had a clipboard. He's wearing horn-rimmed glasses, and he talked about government educational grants. He was the most boring human being in the world. And I had this bastard on my sled night after night. God, I was ready to kill him. And he would sulk. I would yell at him. I'd say, shut up, for God's sake. And he'd sulk for about a mile. It's the most incredible thing.
Oh. So do you still do dog sleds?
No, I had a little heart problem a couple of years ago. I had to get rid of my dogs. I miss them, though.
Do you have any pet dogs?
Oh, yeah. We always got four or five dogs. What we do is we go to the pound. And we try to keep like a core level of about five dogs. So we go to the pound and we say, give us the next one you're going to kill. And we don't look at it. We don't find out what the breed is. We take it, whatever it is. Uh-huh. So I got a border collie, and I got a little terrier, and I got a half lab, and I got a chihuahua right now.
Would you ever keep a husky as a pet?
Sure. The problem with them is that they blow hair all the time.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God, they're just gouts of hair. In fact, we used to have to rake the kennel in the spring. We got up to where we had 90 dogs, 91 dogs.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and you could rake, you would rake mountains of hair.
You strike me as a kind of obsessive guy, somebody who does something to real extremes when you decide to do it, whether it's drinking or sledding or riding.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I have no problem with that. I did with drinking. I that was a terrible problem. The worst thing about drinking, and it's disgusting, is that it destroys clarity. Jesus, I can't. I've said this before some places, but I can't believe that I would do that, that I would try and damage that clarity,
mm-hmm.
the way you see things. It's just insane. To use any kind of mind-altering chemical to me is just completely insane. Why would anybody want to do it? You know, to not see things as they really are, but some fuzzed-up piece of crap that has nothing to do with reality.
Yeah. You even did poverty to the extreme.
I still do.
But you have money now.
I don't, actually. I don't keep it. I give it to Ruth.
Your wife?
Yeah, I don't do anything with it. I have three pair of Levi's, and I replace a new pair every year. About, I get one pair a year when they wear. And I don't buy Mercedes and things. I don't do any of that.
Does it mean a lot to you to have written for young people because books changed your life so much when you were 15?
Yeah, it does. And I'm going to continue writing for young people.
Even as you write for adults?
Yeah. I'm just saying no more walls. The Clabber Dirt, Sweet Grass could be read by young people too. It's not necessarily just an adult book. But it also has some complex things in it that I think younger people might have. Maybe would many of them are smart enough to know it, but you know what I mean. That maybe it would be difficult for some, but I think it would work well for either one, and that's what I'm going to do from now on. I'm just going to write.
When you were doing the Iditarod, would you take a book with you?
Mm-hmm.
What would you take?
I worked every day too. I really did. I had a notebook I wrote, and
what would you read?
I know you want me to say Jack London. I don't think people like Jack London ever ran dogs. He didn't know what he was talking about mostly, but which is kind of sad because he was a good writer. But I took philosophy. I would take historical works,
mm-hmm.
Like study the first century, that kind of thing, and read. Sometimes when the dogs were resting and you couldn't sleep, and you get to where you don't sleep very well, you can't sleep. You just sit with your eyes open. I would read something, just short pieces, a half a page or a page. And then I wrote, too. A lot of the writing was incoherent, though. I would look at it later and think, my God, just scrawled across the paper.
This is the same time that you were hallucinating.
Exactly. God, once I came into a village at night, and I could see people all over on snow machines. They were waving at me and yelling at me, and I was trying to turn my dogs up to in between these two cabins. There were lights in the windows, and I could see people inside eating at their table in the windows. And I blinked, and it was all gone. It was all hallucination, the whole thing. And it was really complex. I mean, God, I could, snow machines were going by me. Guys offered me a beer. It's just incredible.
Is this at all useful to you as a writer to hallucinate?
I don't think so, no. I don't think. It was an interesting study in maybe a kind of temporary madness. But in fact, that maybe that's what the Iditarod is. And what's really sick is I'd be doing it still.
If not for...
My heart. I would have gone again. I would have gone last year, the year before, and I'd be going this year. It just grips you. It just does. And nobody who runs that is ever the same again.
Well, Gary Paulson, I thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
Writer Gary Paulson, recorded in 1992. The Iditarod is currently underway in Alaska. This is Fresh Air.